Stop 12, the Old Chinese Cemetery. To get to the Chinese burial ground, go back up the hill and park just before you come to the main road. On your left there's a house. Watch for the sign near the phone box. From there, it's a 50-metre walk between the house and the road to the Chinese burial ground. Pause this pod tour till you're there. Welcome to the Old Chinese Cemetery at Vaughan. I suggest you either walk around as you listen to the story of the Chinese on these goldfields, or, once you've had a good look, you may like to continue listening to the story as you drive on to Guildford, if you can link this pod tour to your car CD player or radio. But this is the Old Chinese Graveyard. There's some European diggers buried here too, and over the years, it's been the Chinese and the European people of this area who have treasured and maintained this place. One who was involved in its restoration was Fio Hoy, and his nephew, historian Dennis O'Hoy, lives in Bendigo.
Yeah, my grandfather was Louis Du Hoy, came from the capital of the Siyap, was called Toi San. And when he came to Australia, his name was Louis. That's the family name, Du Hoy. And that became anglicised to O'Hoy, so that's how the name O'Hoy came. Grandfather was very successful as a businessman and entrepreneur, and in 1986 he brought my father out to Bendigo to help him in the business. My father was Q O'Hoy, and quite frankly, grandfather came to make his fortune. Certainly he didn't actually dig for gold, but he had shares in the mines. So grandfather added to the family's wealth.
Must have been a big risk, though, because Australia was an awful long way away and not the population you've got in China. He really backed himself there.
No, look, it's like everybody, Jan. You take all the other immigrants from all over the world. You had the Welsh, the Cornish, the French, the British. So if we look at the middle of the 19th century, when the word gold spread throughout the whole world, it was a chance for everybody, be they rich or be they humble, to try and make instant fortunes. Obviously, of course, not everybody was successful, but for the few that found nuggets or were able to establish themselves, it did bring wealth.
Have you got much of a sense of what sort of a place, what sort of a country it was, and what sort of times they were that those people left behind to come here?
Oh, well, look, certainly in Ireland you had the Great Potato Famine, but certainly in China of the mid-1850s, it was a period of turmoil. You had the falling of the emperor, the Qing Dynasty emperors, they were becoming very weak. So China at the time, of course, in the 1850s to the 1900s, was a period of turmoil, and it was a chance for people to get out from China to establish their wealth so they could look after their families.
As they departed, travelling first to Hong Kong, where they boarded the ship to Australia, they heard from their families an old maxim passed down from the ancestors.
Come home with honour and wealth.
Chinese are very, they believe in face. Face is important. For those that were successful and could make their fortune and go back, the family was set for life and such. If you didn't make it, it could only be disgrace for the family. So this is interesting about Chinese families, education. You look at many of the current Asian students here, they have to do well at school. Education is very important. You have to study hard. I know that both my mother and father, with all my siblings, made sure that we were very successful with our education. It's ingrained.
This sentiment was transformed into a folk song of the time, now preserved in the wooden fish books in the library of the Hong Kong University.
Don't marry your daughter to a scholar. You will shut yourself in a lonely room. Don't marry your daughter to a baker. He will sleep in her bed 6 months in 3 years at most. Don't marry your daughter to a farmer. The smell of shit will choke you. Marry your daughter to a gold mountain guest. When his ship comes home, he will bring a fortune.
Look, I suppose it's common with everybody, whether you're Chinese or European or whatever. It's desires for someone to marry into wealth. But with modern philosophy, one now says to marry someone that you're going to be happy with.
Another maxim for the Chinese diggers tells of the need to return home, whether dead or alive.
Leaves fall and return to the root.
Even though you're a lowly, poor miner, your desire was to have the bones taken back to China. Even with my uncles, although they died here in Bendigo, their bones were returned to China.
I understand many poor people came by borrowing money. Is that correct?
Yes. Basically, the wealthy people of the village would support the people who come to the goldfields on the proviso that they pay them back. And if they were lucky, yes, they could pay the people that sponsored them. But I worry about the ones that never made gold, because some people, irrespective of Chinese or French or Italians or Cornish, whatever, a lot of people made money, but a lot more didn't make money at all.
The Chinese gold seekers came from the Pearl River Delta area south of Hong Kong, and particularly from four provinces called Siap near Canton. They left home in village and clan groups, and began arriving here in 1854. They were met at Port Phillip by Chinese compatriots who had formed themselves into Australian chapters of their secret societies from home. These societies assisted with loans to buy tools for digging and also enforced Sunday dress rules so as not to offend the European diggers. One of these societies was the Kong Chu Society, and their written rules for the Chinese diggers concluded with this blessing:
that all our clan fellow will obtain an abundance of gold with which to return to your honor. The product of the earth is to be found in the southern regions. The gathering of it together is for China.
When a sizable amount of Chinese had congregated in Melbourne, they left for the goldfields as a group. Whereas the European diggers travelled in pairs or small groups, the Chinese jogged out of Melbourne in single file, following in each other's footsteps, with bamboo poles and baskets bouncing on their shoulders and their pigtails swinging to the rhythm of their jogging. And you can be sure the people of Melbourne turned out to marvel at the spectacle as these outlandish-looking diggers moved serpent-like into the Victorian bushland. To the Chinese, the central Victorian goldfields they were heading for they called New Gold Mountain, or in Cantonese, Dai Gum San. And when they arrived on the goldfields, their appearance triggered what was to become Australia's long-standing fear of the Asian hordes.
The fact is, we don't want them. I don't want the flat faces, the pug noses, the yellow complexions, the small feet, and the long tails multiplied by a thousandfold amongst us, as they would be very soon if the Chinese ladies came to us, as well as the gentlemen. Considering there are upwards of 400 million of people in China, it would require only a few years of unlimited Chinese immigration to swamp the whole European population of these colonies, to obliterate every trace of British progress and civilization. John Dunmore Lang.
John Dunmore Lang was a prominent Presbyterian clergyman who expressed and inflamed the white man's fears. But in terms of gold, the Chinese were no threat to the European diggers because they only worked the abandoned European diggings. So apart from a racist fear of invasion, what else about the Chinese did the Europeans object to? Dennis O'Hoy.
One of the anti-feelings of the gold rush against the Chinese was, one, the Chinese, of course, looked different. Two, they were claimed to have polluted all the water holes. But three, which the objection was, the Chinese worked in teams. But when you think about it, when you work in teams of 10, 20 or 30 people and you're sluicing or you're panning or digging for gold, there's more sense in working in teams. And this is one of the objections that quite a lot of the European miners had against the Chinese, that they worked in teams. By working in teams, they were more successful. Very often, when sites were abandoned, the Chinese would then go through methodically and actually make some good money out of it.
Perhaps the Europeans also resented the Chinese for finding the gold they'd missed. But like gold fever, the fear of the Chinese was contagious. In 1855, a year after they appeared on the diggings, the Victorian Parliament imposed a poll tax of £10 a head on every Chinaman disembarking at Port Phillip Bay. Now, considering that the hated licence tax was 30 shillings or £1.5, £10 was an exorbitant amount of money. One man, Kuang Chu, thought to be a Melbourne merchant, petitioned the government.
Wherefore have we Chinese humbly disembarked upon your pleasant shores, giving just cause for your anger? This we wish to know. Among our number there are, believe me, skilled men. I have gardeners who know how to cultivate all sorts of flowers and fruits in good and bad soils, carpenters and craftsmen who work in precious woods and ivory, good cooks who would not permit anything to be badly blended or waste, locksmiths, inventors of games of patience, artificers, carvers of fence and chess pieces, and even people who make musical instruments, which yet another know how to play. Why should all these talents be disgraced? In all humility of heart, and with all accustomed ceremonies, we wait in silence for a reply of vermilion color. Kuang Chu.
Vermilion or red signifies rejoicing, but it was not to be. The Victorian government insisted on the £10 tax. But there was a loophole. The tax applied to the Chinese landing in Port Phillip Bay. It did not apply to the South Australian border. So the Chinese disembarked in South Australia, and they walked between 500 and 800 kilometres to the diggings. The closest South Australian port was Robe, south of Adelaide, near the Coorong, and between 1856 and 1858, around 16,000 Chinese diggers walked from Robe to the Victorian goldfields, all the way in single file. Of those 16,000, only two were women. On the way they dug wells and marked trees for those who followed.
I met 600 and 700 of them coming over land. They had four wagons carrying their sick, lame, and provisions, and they were all walking single file, each one with a pole and two baskets, and they stretched for over 2 miles in procession. As I stood on a hill when I first came in sight of them, I could not make out what was coming. They were winding across the plain like a long black mark, and as I passed them, everyone behind seemed to be yabbering to his mate in front in a sing-song tone. It was a beautiful morning, and I did not feel very much against them, although they were defrauding the revenue. There was a poll tax of £10 on each one of them, so there was a loss of revenue of about £7,000 on this one lot. They nearly all had hats like the top of a haystack, nearly a yard across. There were soon nearly 40,000 of them on the diggings. They were no good to the storekeepers, for they lived on the smell of an oily rag. A sheep's head and a little rice would keep John for a week. I've carted some from one digging to another, and I found them great gamblers and very ready to cheat you. But they do have one good trade, which young Australians would do very well to copy. They always reverenced their parents and the aged, and I've noticed the young ones would not sit down till the aged ones bade them, and they spoke very respectfully to their elders. They are all new chums. I expect they would lose their good manners when they get colonised. John Chandler.
In spite of the long walk, by 1857, there were over 25,000 Chinese on the Victorian goldfields. They were a considerable percentage of the Victorian gold mining population, so on the 24th of November 1857, the Victorian government imposed a residency tax of £1 per month. It applied only to the Chinese. When the residency tax was first mooted, 1,200 Chinese gathered at Mechanics Hill in Castlemaine. Chua Luk, a missionary and interpreter who organised the meeting, translated for the Mount Alexander Mail.
Ever since we have been here, whenever walking a piece of good ground, English people drive us away, and the Chinaman could not get rich. Hitherto, the English people charged them £1 a year, and the Chinaman tried to get it. But sometime, Chinese not have a pound, and a policeman come and search for it, and bring Chinese man before magistrate, who fine him 40 shillings or 5 pounds, and the Chinaman subscribe to make it up. On the road here, many of them died of hunger and thirsty and disease. Some hanged themselves. They thought the English would kill them or take all their money in fines. Their wives often send letters to them asking for money to support them. But the Chinamen were often too poor to send any, and their wives died in poverty.
A petition was sent to the Governor of Victoria, Sir Henry Barclay, but the residency tax on the Chinese people stayed, and so did the Chinese diggers. By 1861, the Loddon River around Vaughan was exclusively in the hands of Chinese miners, and this old Vaughan cemetery was used for burials from about 1854 till 1859. To honour the memory of their countrymen, for decades the Chinese came here with small ceremonial dragons and fireworks, and to burn incense to their ancestors. But the biggest Chinese village of all was at our next stop, Guildford, which is a drive along the valley of the Loddon River. Directions are on track 13.